Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
Well, we're continuing our series called Loving on Purpose. Last week we went through Ecclesiastes, where he talks about what is the meaning of life. Is there anything new under the sun? It's a real like kind of a verse. But really, we talked about how you discover your purpose is all through getting curious. Purpose just doesn't like pop out at you from the sky and fall down. And you're like, oh, that is my purpose now. It's all about leaning into the conversation, learning new things, willing to change and adapt and evolve and grow and ask and celebrate and grieve and laugh. All those things help us become Jesus-looking people again and again and again and again. And so last week we said, what is the purpose of life? And we went through how it is love God and love people. Now for the next 4 weeks, we're going to break it down of how do we actually do that on purpose? If our purpose is really to love God and love people, how do we do that on purpose? And I'm convinced that you unless you know what your purpose is, you can't grow on purpose. And like what we're called to be as followers of Jesus, of connecting with the divine, is just not to stay the same. Like a lot of us are big fans of not changing, all right? It's like you pick your restaurant and you're sticking with it, the same sandwich. I have a friend who goes to Perkins just to get the chicken tender melt. And that's the only thing he eats, all right? And his name may or may not be Steve Hamlin. So they, it's like that is my sandwich, right? But like as spiritual people, like we want to grow. And we should grow. And growing's scary. Growing can be challenging. Like adapting and learning and then actually doing it can feel really risky. But it's worth it, friends. So today we're actually going to be talking about how do we love with our heart and our soul. Even like you say, even trying to define the soul, all of us have a totally different take on it. But before we get into that, I want to read through Mark chapter 12, 28, 31, and go through again when Jesus talks about loving God and loving people. Starting in verse 28, one of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked them, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this: Love your neighbor as yourself. There's no commandment greater than these." So Jesus gets approached by this guy and says, "Hey, what's the most important one? I'm really curious." And we're going to get into like maybe his motives. And Jesus cites two different passages from the Old Testament. And that's why we sum it up. Like, we're going to love God and we're going to love people. It's on our pens. It's on shirts. It's pretty much everywhere because that's what it's for. But sometimes we miss out on this. Because we have it up on stage, you see it all the time, like worship leaders try hiding behind it, all right? Like we somewhat miss on the end of it, because if you look at the rest of the verse, at the very end, in verse 34, it says, "And from then on, no one dared ask him any more questions." So Jesus shares this, like, what's the most important thing? He shares it, and something with this audience, something with these people, it shook them to their core. Because it says, and the author made point of saying, and for some reason, no one dared ask him any more questions. It's like you visit your friend who lives near like the train tracks, right? And it's like around nighttime, and that train comes, right? People who live like in Cloquet, over on the East End, you hear that train, and you're like, how do you sleep at night? And they're like, what are you talking about? As like the whole house is shaking, right? When you're when you're living in it, you just become used to it. It's just normal. And you're like, oh yeah, that huge train going by. The same thing is with loving God and loving people. We hear it. We're like, oh yeah, that's a cute little thing. Yeah, I mean, of course I want to love God. And yeah, I'm a big fan of loving people. That's a real nice thing. Let's get some nachos. But there's something so incredibly deep here that we're missing out on. Or it's easy to miss out on. Because what happens is, Jesus says this to this guy, and then the guy replies and basically repeats back to him and says, oh yeah, I want to do that. And Jesus says, and you are close to the kingdom of God. Because of what you're doing, of what you just said, you are now close. N.T. Wright, one of an author and theologian who's a brilliant mind, he talks on of like Jesus' foreshadowing just a little bit of, hey, all those temple practices, like all those things that you do, like those are positive, big fan of them, keep going for it, but like you might not need all of them anymore. You are close to the kingdom. Kingdom doesn't have to go this route. Now this kingdom can come when you are intentionally and on purpose engaging and loving the divine. And then this outpouring of yourself, engaging, giving the best of yourself to whoever is right in front of you. If you do that, the kingdom of God is at hand. Heaven is like within reach. So what Jesus does here is, well, how about the guy first? He's trying to keep the American dream living on. The American dream is, I want to get paid top dollar for no work, right? If I could just keep getting paid, but not have to show up or do the work or be held responsible or even talk to anyone, I would choose that, right? We would like efficiency. We would like to get right to the point. And this guy, I believe even genuinely, is trying to say, hey, Jesus, there's over 600 commandments. That's a big number, right? 600 plus commandments. Like if you could just maybe give me the headlines, just give me the top two, right? Give me the top two and I'll do those. And I can say, well, blame Jesus. He's the one who told me to do this, all right? Peter, you gotta let me in, right? That was a heaven joke that didn't land. So I just thought of it in my own head and I said it out loud. So what am I talking about? Oh yeah, 600 commandments, right? 600 commandments, so let me in. And in a way, also, throughout the Gospels, people are trying to trap Jesus. They're trying to get him cornered in on something by asking these questions. Because if Jesus says, like, you know, out of, like, let's just say these 10 commandments, we'll just take the top 10. If he answers, like, these two, they could say, oh, we knew you were a bleeding heart liberal, right? You're, like, on social reform, and you want to help the poor. That's great. That's real, real, real great. You're one of those liberals, right? And if he answers a different one and say, ah, gotcha, you're one of those... Can you be a bleeding heart conservative? I don't know. I've only heard bleeding heart liberal. So you're a outpouring of a heart conservative, right? And they often try to get him into these camps. And Jesus over and over and over again elevates the conversation to something bigger. You see, the Ten Commandments, like they're really great. The Ten Commandments are a lot more than something that just hangs in like a courtroom where you look at it and say, all right, God, don't send me to hell, all right? Because I clearly broke one of them because I'm in this place, all right? It's underneath the Ten Commandments, it's all about love. The Ten Commandments were birthed out of love. Actually, the Ten Commandments came when the Israelites were under oppression. They were in slavery from anywhere between like 200 to 400 years. That's a long time. Even if you go on the low end, that's a long time. Where they're in slavery, they're in oppression, whatever Pharaoh wants to do, they have to do it. They don't have an identity anymore. Their identity is, oh, we're just slaves. Like, they don't get to be who God intended them to be. Then all of a sudden, this guy with the beard and the staff, right, throws on the ground, becomes a snake, and you've seen the show, right, comes and leads them out of captivity. It is actually this beautiful story, this beautiful picture of a good God who comes and leads his people out. And if you can imagine going from, hey, I'm just a slave, and all of a sudden the guy says, hey, we're going this way. All right, let's go, right? And now you're not a slave anymore. Who are you? Like, have you ever been in a toxic relationship? You don't need to raise your hand, right? You're like, I might be in one. So, toxic relationship, no, but seriously, no joke, of where maybe you've been in a dating relationship, maybe you're in a family, maybe you are or were in a marriage, or maybe you were in like a spiritual community of where you don't get to decide what you think. You don't dare ask questions, right? It's like, we're going to tell you what to laugh at, we're going to tell you what you can watch, we're going to tell you what you can read, but really we're going to tell you more of what you can't watch and what you can't read and what you can't laugh at, or the people you can't talk to. You ever been in one of those? It's hard. And you might be in the middle of it and you don't know, and everyone else around you is saying, why are you dating this person? Why are you dating this loser? He's just treating you like garbage. Why are you willingly putting yourself under this teaching around these group of people who are just shaming you and shaming other people? You're like, no, this is the Lord's will. I've talked to a lot of people like this. But until you get out of that circle, until you get out of that relationship, until you get out of that community, and all of a sudden you have like the aha moment, and you're like, what was I thinking? And it feels good, it feels freeing, but at the same time, it's daunting and it's scary. So, well, who am I? And you need a strong community of people around you. You need some strong friends. You need some strong people who can say, no, you can do that. You are worth this. You can speak up. You don't have to sit down and be humble. You can stand up and say, I am worth it. And they need to remind you again and again and again to the point of where you have found who you really are, that was taken from you or that you've given away. The Ten Commandments is God coming to his people and saying, you were in a toxic relationship, friends. You've missed out on who you are. Let me remind you, let me show you again. Let me help remind you of your brand, of your identity, of who you are, that there is the Lord your God. There shall be no other gods before me. It's birthed out of this love of saying, I'm here, I'm real, I'm radically available. With Pharaoh, there's all these other gods for all these other things. He's saying, you know what, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Way to go, gods, right? But there's one, and it's me. And you know what? You're going to treat your parents with love and respect. You're going to honor them. It's out of love. And actually, we're going to treat other people's property, other people's stuff, we're going to treat it with respect because they have value and they have worth. We're not going to play this class system game anymore of saying, I'm bigger, stronger, better looking. I'm one of the beautiful people. Now it's mine, including your wife. It's like it's the Ten Commandments at the time was revolutionary. And it was to help remind them who they are. And Jesus is here again in this statement. It's like those Ten Commandments all of a sudden got tacked on like 500 and some more. Well, actually a lot more, 600 and some more. It's funny. Like we get something really good, something that like humans are really good at. We're like, oh, this is amazing. Now let's make it not as good. Let's make it more complicated. Let's make sure we can easily identify like, okay, Jane, Betsy, you are clearly in, all right? And Chris is clearly out. Why? Because here's a scoreboard. And all our commandments have told us what the score is. Jesus comes back again to this question saying, hey, can you sum it all up? It's almost like he's coming again and saying, hey, let me remind you who you are. Let me remind you who we are. Because you were made to love. And we're not going to make it about these commandments. Jesus never like mocks the commandments. He always brings it back to himself of saying, you know who we are? We're love. We are made to love. And why? Because God is love. So then he goes in to love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul. So that's where we're going to live today. How do you actually love God with your heart? Like, how do you love God with your soul? It's not, you just can't like squeeze a muscle like, all right, here comes, no, that's not my soul, all right? All right, it's like, how do you love with your soul? And even when you say the word soul, it's like some of us, we have this, the soul is like this ghost bird that flies in the air, right? Or the soul is like this mystic thing that has like this energy or this color. It can be all of it. See, throughout the Bible, they talk about how we love God with our heart. Jesus isn't trying to be trendy here. And how you love God with your soul. It comes up often. Actually, I'm going to highlight, where am I? Just two of them. Proverbs 4:23. Keep vigilant watch over your heart because that's where all life starts. In Genesis 2, we see this beautiful story of this good God creating this good earth. And he creates humans. And it talks on how the breath of God, the same word that created everything, the breath of God. So now it's not just a word. It is something intentionally blown into woman, something intentionally blown into man. The presence of the divine goes into the nostrils, fills the body. See, the soul is like what ties everything of us together. It's more than just your personality. It's more than just something available for your mate, right? Soulmate, right? It's something, it's like the very essence that ties our body, our personality, everything together. It's like the fullness of us. Because you were made in the image of God. So like, how do we actually love then with our heart and our soul? Like we use hearts for everything. We think about love songs, don't break my heart, my achy breaky heart, right? We associate hearts with love. And why? Because at the center of us is our, well, not kind of center, all right? Somewhere around here is, I'm not a doctor, somewhere around here is a heart, and it pumps blood to every part of your being over and over and over. And if you ever have like a weak heart or there's a part of your body that's not getting enough blood, it what? Doesn't live up to its full potential. Have you ever woken up in the morning and you're like, whose dead clammy hand am I holding, right? And you have to think about like what you did last night. You're like, no. And you look over and you're like, oh, it's your own hand. And it, you know, you fell asleep on it, right? Thank you for laughing. So, and it's dead, but it just feels like this weird thing. And you like slap it, you try picking it up and it does this. And then you kind of laugh at it. You do this, like, hey, honey, look at this. So, all right, and why? Why does it feel dead? Because if you cut off the blood can't get there. The life and the resource and the oxygen, all of it can't get to what it was intended to be. So like when, I don't know about you guys, if you were a part of evangelical circles growing up, you heard the words, we're going to ask Jesus into our heart and then our soul will be saved. All right, anyone? Anyone, that's what you heard when you're younger? All right, yeah, me, just us three. So me as well. And I remember with our first son, before we found new language, right? Before we knew, found new language, we talked to Cole and like, hey, you know, Jesus, do you want to ask Jesus into your heart? And Cole kind of like did this. And he's like, how is he going to get in there, right? It's kind of creepy if you think about it as a kid, like Jesus coming into your heart. Oh, no, stay away. Oh, that's funny. And the reason that we say it is because what we're really inviting people into is to allow God, to allow the person of Jesus to be the most prominent part of your life. Because when you say yes to Jesus, when you orientate your life around Jesus, you make him like the highest priority, then you're, what you're saying is, I want you to drive life to every part of my being. I want nothing cut off. I want every part of my intellect, my mind, my body, my emotions, my soul, how I spend my money, how I treat sexuality, of how I love my enemies and how I love my friends. I want you to drive life to every part of it, and I can only do that if you are at my heart, if you are at the center. So that's what it means. How you actually like worship God with your heart, how you love God with your heart is if you put him in his proper place. You put Jesus at the proper place of your life. And when you do that and you let love lead, you let his life, you let his words, you let his spirit, you let like his power drive every part of you, what you get is him. What you get is heaven. So it's putting him in his proper place. We have to be submersed in love. And if and when we do that, love does something to us. Like, why do we love love? It's like love awakens things in us. Do you remember when you met the person you loved for the first time? You probably did some really stupid stuff, right? I know you did, right? You probably, you went out of your way to try jumping over a car to impress a girl, right? You probably laughed at all his jokes that were not funny, right? You want, even when you meet like a new friend, even if it's not someone that you're dating, maybe you find a new friend and you feel like, I want to become better friends with them. And so, of course, I love Radiohead. Yeah, they're my totally favorite band too, right? And why do you do that? You want to be like associated with them. You want to be close to them. See, love awakens something inside of us because we are created. We are made out of love. You were forged out of love. So the idea of instead of allowing my power to be at the center of who I am, like men are really good at this. I want my ability to be right to be at the center of who I am because I feel alive when I'm right. Or I want like my privilege of, I want that to be at the center of my life because then I can make sure I'm going to get what I want or what I'm entitled to. I'm going to put my kids at the center of my existence because that's who I am as a parent. I'm going to put like my pleasure in any shape, way, or form at the center. And you know what? When you do that, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. You're going to get more pleasure if you put it at the center of your life. You will have, your kids will be the most important thing in the whole world if you put them at the center. If you put like your friends, whatever you put at the center, you will get more of it. What I've learned is that it doesn't always land to where you want it to be. It doesn't always lead to the life that you hoped it would. But it's interesting. When I allow God to be at the center of my life, I reorientate my life around him. We call that worship. It's funny, like my relationship with my kids gets better. Like the way I love like the people around me, the way I operate in my privilege, it's still messy. It's still uncomfortable. Like no one really likes talking about it, right? Even when I say the word, some people are just like, please stop talking about it. I'm right there too. But when I put God in proper context and I could see where I'm at in this world, in culture and society, then I can have a lot more room to do this. A lot more room to do this. And because of this, loving God, those who are listening to the podcast, I'm pointing to signs. It'd be kind of weird to listen to that. So then, so if that's what we're made to, submerse ourselves in love, the way we worship God is through like putting him in his proper context, how do we grow? How do you grow on purpose about loving God with your heart and your soul? It goes like this. When I just met with someone about getting married, right? The Cooks. Caleb and Pearl Cook are getting married soon, right? And I'm excited about marrying you guys. I think they're in the back because they hear your thumbs up. Right, so when I talked to them, I talked to every couple I'm about to marry, talking on, I thought life would not get better from the day I married Nikki. When Nikki said yes to marry me and we got to our wedding, I thought that was the most I would ever love her. Because that day, I could tell you our wedding was this. Half hour before the wedding, I started crying until about 10 minutes after our wedding, right? So our whole wedding is we're doing, right? Just red face and snot. That was essentially, if we gotta write a book about my wedding, that's what it would be called. So what am I getting at? Oh. But if we would have said 14 years from now that I'd be even more in love with Nikki, I would have said, not possible. Because that day was a great day. It was an amazing day. But I love my wife significantly more than I did 14 years ago. Each day, I find something new to be amazed and my mind blown by my wife. How you grow in love is by creating space for it. How you grow in love is by putting its proper context. And so like when I actually take time to listen to my wife and she says, hey, will you tidy up when you get done making this huge mess, right? Instead of the nice way possible. I could either say, no, I'm good, right? And walk away. Or I could trust maybe she knows something that would actually land to her heart and I listen to her. It's when things I love about Nikki. I love hearing Nikki in the middle of the night. She'll get up and start playing the piano in the living room and start worshiping. I love that. I love when she's reading a book, she'll laugh, right? She'll also, huh? And then she'll turn and she'll tell me about it. I love that. I love how she plays, what does she call it? She calls it Horse O'Brien with the kids, where she's just this horse and she just randomly runs off and then they have to go chase her and she doesn't want to be caught. It's hilarious, right? But if I'm not willing to put the time and energy in creating space in my calendar, by actually showing up, and not just showing up and saying, I'm watching TV, don't bother me, but actually being sitting around her, listening for her, awaiting her, expecting to have my mind blown, expecting for my heart to be fully alive. If I'm not willing to be engaged in it, I will not grow in it. I will not grow in it. See, how you grow in love is you need radical commitment. You need a firm, radical commitment. If you don't have commitment, you can't grow in love. And it's like, imagine that your house or your life or your marriage or in your relationship is like a big home. And you get married, you walk into that home and you're like, look at the curtains, it's so pretty, right? If you don't lock the windows, lock the front door, and more importantly, don't lock the back door. Because let me warn you that marriage is hard. Relationships are incredibly hard. They cost you a lot. And if that back door is open, even for a little bit, and I'll often say, hey, I'm going to go away for a golf weekend, and she says, say that again, right? And I don't get my way again and again, and we keep bumping heads. At some point, I'm going to do what, right? You're going to look at that back door and say, huh, it's pretty nice back there. There's a lot of freedom out there. I saw on Facebook that old classmate. I wonder what she's up to. Like, if that back door is open, even slightly, if it's even an option to run out that back door, Is my love for my wife going to grow? Or is the love for me to get my own way going to grow? What I tell couples is you walk in that house, you lock the doors, and you tip the couch and the fridge over that back door. You barricade it. Because unless there's unwavering, radical commitment. Because here's why. I love my wife. Is there moments that I don't feel in love? Yeah. You talk to Jim shaking his head, yep, yeah. If you've been married for or in a relationship longer than 2-3 years, there's moments where I'm not super excited about showing up. There's times I'd much rather play another 18 holes of golf, right? Much rather do that than a lot of stuff. But if my wife is inviting me to a place to land in her heart to love, I'm gonna do that. Because it's interesting, when you do that, even if you don't feel it, but you know it, your heart catches up to your head pretty fast. When I walk in and my family has dinner and they're laughing, it's like, this is better than anything else in the whole entire world. In the moment, it doesn't feel it, but when I show up, it does. It's radical commitment. And this is how you grow in love all through life, because this is what it looks like to follow Jesus. This is how you grow in loving God with your heart and your soul, is you put him in the proper place. You say, God, you get to be number one. And does it make sense? No. It doesn't. There's times it doesn't make any sense. It's like, why am I going to deny myself these things when it clearly feels like that's going to feel pretty good? That's going to help me advance my career. This is going to help me just as a woman or as a man. And I feel like I should be able to do those things. There's times like, no, I'm not going to. Why? I don't know. And I hear the answers that people have given me sometimes, like we talked about last week, the nice little cute little cookie cutter answers. But I'm going to trust that there might be something more. It's willing to say yes to God. And when you put yourself in that place of saying, I'm going to give you the best of myself, because that is incredibly important. That I'm not giving my kids, I'm not giving my wife just like, not even sloppy seconds, but sloppy eights, right? Because if I want to grow in my love with Nikki and I said, hey, honey, I want to grow. I want to have our minds blown. I want to have like this intimacy and this laughing, these tickle fights all through the night. Or I want to do all of that. She goes, okay, sweet. Why don't we go get together and let's like read and share what we're learning. I'm like, oh, that's great, honey. But I got softball tonight. Okay, what about next week? Ooh, that's not good. I have Stranger Things to watch again for the 100th time, all right? Okay, how about the next night? Oh, if only I didn't have to work late. Okay, what about the next night? Oh, that's when I'm going to get down to my friends. You can't interrupt friend time. If I'm not willing to give the best of myself to her, how are we going to grow? So my question is, what does it look like to give the best of your heart for you? How do you give the best of yourself to the divine? How do we put Jesus in his proper place? And I don't have all the answers. I know for me, it's a lot of what we talked about last week, of getting curious and asking questions like, why? Why do I believe what I really believe? And going on and talking with my friends. Sitting down, I had a great conversation with Jordan Sundberg. And talking through, but I've always thought this, I always believed this, but why this? Why now? And going back to God's word. And reading some more, and laughing some more, and singing some more, and talking some more. If you're willing to lean into the conversation, if you're willing to lean into grow, it's funny how you're going to continue to say yes to God. So my question again is, do you dare love like this? Do you dare love a God like this? Because it's risky, it's vulnerable, but it's the best. So I'm gonna give you just quickly, I'm gonna give you just a couple of things that we call soul care. Because we talked a lot about like, how do we love God with our heart, but how do we then we take care of our soul? Because there's actual exercises, actual practices that we can do that will set us up for success so that we can continue to engage with God. We can continue to give our best to him. First one is this, sleep. And when I read this the first time, it came out of Good and Beautiful God book. The very first exercise, he says, hey, take one day and sleep until you can't sleep anymore. And I thought, wow, honestly, in my mind, I thought that's weak. That's weak. That's what I thought, because I'm a let's get stuff done, let's work till we're dead kind of person. right? And so the idea of sleeping in just felt like, no, that's not what good people do. That's not what spiritual people do. Spiritual people get up at 4 a.m. and on their knees crying for 4 hours saying, oh, save me, Father, right? You ever felt that? You laugh. You ever felt that? Like, oh, no, really good spiritual people pray like this. And here he's saying, sleep. And why? How's it taking care of your soul to sleep? Because we love to win, friends. We love to succeed. And we work hard. And that's good, right? Like us Norwegian folk in here, like we're like, what are you gonna do today? Work. Are you going to rest or play? Work when I'm dead, or I'll play when I'm dead, right? Sleep. Because when you are rested, when you are like actually healthy, sleep's a big part of that. Then you can walk through your day and still work hard, do all those things, but your mind and your body and even your soul are more aware of what God's doing all around you. Sleep. Next one is, write down. Write down all the things that you love. I have this journal, this app. It's called like Take 5 or something like that, where every morning at 8 and every night at 9, I get a little prompt on my phone and it just says, what are the 3 things that you love today? And then it asks me one simple question. Today I am blank. And I don't do it every morning, but when I do, man, I am significantly more aware of what I love. Because we're experts at the things that we don't like, right? We are like just awesome at telling people around us what is wrong. Oh, my back hurts, my foot hurts, people drive too slow, it's cold outside, right? I don't like your shirt, your joke's not funny, all those things, right? But if you take just a moment and start writing down every day, or maybe once a week, write down, what are some blessings in your life? God, thank you for Hardee's. All right, God, thank you for, clearly it's everyone's number one, right? God, thank you that the Vikings won by 100 points today. Thank you for my children. Thank you for my niece, who every time she sees me, runs up to me and calls me Quiss, right? But more importantly, just writing down, is pull them out and read them. Because it recenters us. It's good for our soul to be engaged in love. Engaged in love. Next one is sing. Oh, no, next one is get outside, right? Yeah, get outside. It's cold out. We're all aware of that, right? It's cold. But there's something about getting outside. Even for a moment, for me, I love getting out. And when it's so cold and I breathe in, that it hurts my lungs, right? I like that. I don't know why. But it reminds me of that there's something so much bigger than my living room. There's something so much bigger than some Netflix series. There's something bigger than just getting in the garage, driving to work, going to my office, getting back in the car, driving to the garage, get inside. Like Nikki and I just went for a walk at Jay Cook a couple days ago, and she like grabbed, I was, of course, talkie, right? And she stopped me, and she goes, listen. And all of a sudden we heard the breeze come through the trees, and you could hear the trees like creaking from moving back and forth. That's good for your soul, friends. And the last one is this, or 2 more, is sing. Sing. Like, we do worship here, not because we're not like regulated by law to sing songs about Jesus because we're a church, right? Like, we sing it because it's good. And so if it's here, I encourage you to try it. If you never sung, start like this. Just sing this really loud. Don't even move your lips. Be like, what do you call those? Like mannequin people, like ventriloquists? People won't know you're singing. You're like, I love you, God, it's so good, right? But when we engage our body to our spirit, we use our actual out loud words to what we believe to be true inside, it connects our head and our heart. It might be doing it in your car. And it doesn't even have to be it's not like only sing Jeremy Riddle worship songs and anything else is like, it's garbage, right? Just sing. There's something beautiful about singing, right? Like me with my kids, I just sang Sia from the Chandeliers, right? You know that song? I'll swing from the chandeliers. And it goes a lot higher, right? It feels good just to sing with my kids. It's this mystic way of connecting. Sing. The last one is this, and you guys are really good at this today, so I appreciate it, is laugh. Just laugh. We take ourselves so seriously. We really do. Laugh. Enjoy life. When you're watching the Vikings game, and if something bad happens, instead of like taking your drink and throwing it through the window of your friend's house, all right? Just laugh. Even if it's nervous, like, ha, 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 ha. It is well with my soul, all right? Just honestly, I feel like so often we miss out on beautiful moments with the divine because we're not willing to laugh. We're not willing to laugh. Get around friends. Meet new friends. One of the big reasons we do small groups, right? Like Nikki talked about, it is about, hey, we can share life and we can ask questions about Jesus and we can grow. We want you to make friends. I just talked to one of our old friends, Lori Hatch, moved down to the cities, and she talked about her some of their best friends they met in the cities because they went to a small group. And they're like, we didn't really want to go. But we went, and out of that, they found some life-giving friendships. Talked with Jamie and John Yevjeski. We just had our small group celebration with the leaders, and they talked about, I can't believe how many friends we've made just by hosting small group. If you're here and you're even thinking about a small group, I'm going to be back at that table. We have all our cards out there in the map. I could help you find a great fit. So this is where I end. Some of you are here, and you're feeling distant. You're feeling hopeless. You've tried this whole spirituality thing before. You say, yeah, I tried doing the Ask Jesus in my heart. It didn't work out so well. I feel like I'm out. I feel like if I just wouldn't have done that one thing, if this thing hadn't been done to me, or I questioned or I doubted, I used to play that game, Chris, not anymore. If you're here and you feel that, you feel like your soul is not free and alive with the ghost bird, but is heavy and burdened and exhausted, this is for you. 1 John 4:19. We, though, are going to love. I love that opening statement. Whatever else he's talking about, all these other things, he goes, you know who we are? We're not thinking about loving. We're not considering it. It's not in the top five. We are going to love, and we're going to be loved. When you give the best of yourself, when you love, what you get back in return is love itself. First we were loved, now we loved, because he loved us first. You are loved. You are not lost. Because you might be in this desert season, you might be in this, like, I'm on this journey and I'm questioning everything season, doesn't mean you are bad, does not mean you are wrong. Doesn't mean that you get kicked out of the tribe. It means it's where you are. So if you are feeling hopeless, you're feeling tired, I got this actual picture. I believe that God speaks to us in all different kinds of ways. I got a picture that some of you here, it's like going back to junior high dance. Remember junior high dances, right? And it's just the first slow song, and you walked into that dance getting all dressed up already, and you're like, and Billy's going to ask me to dance, right? Billy's going to ask me. It's going to happen. And you walk into that dance, the first slow song, and you look around, and all of a sudden, all the beautiful people come out, and they walk right by to go to all the other beautiful people. And they go dance, and you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe sloppy seconds, right? Maybe someone else. I'll take sloppy seconds. And everyone else, like the not so much beautiful people, but good enough people, right? They come in and they ask all the other kind of good enough people and they all dance. And then the third wave and the fourth wave, and you're standing alone. And you picture God of saying, he always picks them. You see the way they worship? They put their hands in the air. He likes them a lot more than me. These people have their own Bible. You must love them more, right? Oh, they have, their kids do these things, my kids do these things. Whatever it is, you feel like I don't get picked, I don't get chosen. Here we say that God chooses you. He chose you first. So I'm gonna pray here in a little bit. As I'm praying, if you feel that, I'm gonna invite you, you can, however you connect with the divine, however you connect your heart and your soul and your body to the Creator himself, I'm going to invite you to do that. And as I pray, receive. Actually, if you don't mind, let's stand. Let's stand. I'm going to pray for us. For me, a way that I connect with God, I always center myself, and I say this often, but I think it's a good thing, just that, this is a good tip. I close my eyes, and not because I'm more spiritual than other people who open their eyes, right? But it helps just center myself, helps distract and just bring all the other things. Like, are my nachos going to be any good today, right? All the football game, all the stress, or how much money is my bank account? That person, are they looking at me or not looking at me? Whatever it might be, just closing my eyes just helps center myself on God. And I hold my hands open at times as just a way of physically stating, God, whatever you have for me, I want to receive. I'm going to put myself in a posture of position of, I don't know about you, but I really want to receive something from God. So let me pray for us. So Holy Spirit, will you come? In Psalm 40, the writer talks about how he feels that all of my sins are just like lumped on top of me, how it's crushing. And he talks about like all the hair on his head, like all the sins he's done. But then he says, but you lifted me out of that pit and you stood me and put me on a rock, a place of confidence, a place of safety, a place of love and trust. So I pray for my friends here today who feel they're in the pit, who feel without hope. The idea of trusting God, of putting him in at the proper place in our life feels really scary. God, will you come? And we say yes to you. We say yes to you for all my friends in this journey, this spiritual journey, wherever they're at, from incredibly close to God or just brand new to it or still searching and everything in between. God, give us what we need to continue to say yes to you. Help us grow in purpose in the way that we love you, and will you bring life to every part of our being? Help us take care of our soul, because God, you are worth it. So we trust you and we love you. Amen. So I'm going to invite our prayer ministry team to make their way up. And if you're here and you'd like a friend, you'd like someone to stand with you and pray with you, we'd love to pray for you about anything that's going on. There's two things specifically that I wrote down. It says this: you want to receive this kind of love, maybe come back to this kind of love. It starts very simply by receiving it. You don't need magic words. You don't need a secret handshake. Where it starts is you just by saying, yes, I want that. I'm willing to receive it. The people up here would love to pray with you of what that's like. And the second one is this: there's people here, the word I got was that you feel like your soul is tired and your soul's burned out. There's hope. And if you're here and you feel like your soul is alive and you are connecting with the divine and you just feel like I'm in this sweet spot, then I'm going to encourage you to worship. Sing to God the songs we're singing and say thank you. So thank you for coming to the Vineyard. Go Vikings, Skull Vikings, and we'll see you guys next week.